Hello, everybody. Welcome back. There's a couple of changes for tonight's show, just because. Oh, hold on. Have I messed up the microphone there? Oh, look. No. If I do that, Jesse, you might have both bits of the microphone can hear me now. And I think I covered something up.
Huh?
Or it's some weird pinhole camera that one of my ex-girlfriends has put into my laptop that I've never noticed until now. Okay. So, welcome back, everyone. How are you all doing? Really good to see you. Not that I can see you. I don't have cameras in all of your laptops or your phones or anything. I feel like I'm going down a... I feel like we're going down a rabbit hole that I shouldn't have started now. I tell you
nice
what...
Nice to see we're focused this week.
I know, mate. I'm shocked. Right, I'll start again and you can delete everything we've already done, right?
Nope.
Welcome back, everyone. We've missed you. It's me, Paul Newton, and Jesse Lawrence. Jesse, say hello.
Hello.
We're back. We've got another interview for you. This one is with a really good buddy of mine. I love him to bits. His name's Steve Hewlett. He's a ventriloquist, and he's really blooming good. I mean, I love watching him work. His stuff is amazing. But we actually first met through a mutual friend when he asked me to do a charity gig. Did this charity gig for Steve. We've gone far too well with each other ever since. And he was in, I don't know if you've heard of this small show he was in, Jesse. It's something called Britain's Got Talent. Don't I?
Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, I know America's Got Talent has done quite well. I don't know if you've heard of Britain's Got Talent. But yeah, he did. He got into the finals of it quite a few years ago now. And we kind of talk about the entertainment industry. We talk about our work together. We talk about how his world has gone, what's changed because of BGT, what else he's up to. He's currently in Panto as well over in Milton Keynes. So if you want to see how good he is with his mate Arthur Lager, you really should just go and watch. And we talk about a few other things because both of us are quite heavily involved in different charity gigs. And he's in an organisation called the Water Rats, and I'm going to give you a minute to go and have a look at that later, and we talk about that. And that's basically a bunch of entertainers who cover each other's backside and help each other and do charity gifts together. So we had loads to chat about. Now, if you were listening last week, you know that Jesse wasn't feeling very well. Jesse, mate, you haven't been well. What's it now? Nearly 2 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mate, and he's been that bad that even my abusive messages late at night, he's ignored some of them because he's just gone back to sleep. So, Jesse, thank you for being here, mate. I hope you're feeling a bit better. But because of that, and because we wanted to get Steve's show out because at the start of the Panto season, because he'd literally gone live doing it today, I think I'll check that. But we wanted to get the show out now. Oh, yes, he has. Well, he might have, but I'm rubbish with details.
Let's go with the oh no he hasn't, oh yes he has ambivalence, and then people can work it out for themselves.
Yeah, just look up Steve Hewlett, Panto, Milton Keynes. There you go, you'll find him. We'll get a link up for it somehow. Don't worry, Jesse's good at that stuff. But yeah, we have a really nice chat around all of this stuff. But because Jesse hasn't been feeling well, it means the interview was just me and Steve. I didn't have Jesse in the background to help me. It felt really, really wrong.
Fingers crossed, people.
And I know I'm going to make an apology now that on some of the sound, there was weird glitchy noises, okay, when Steve was talking to me. So I don't know if that was because of Steve's setup. I know that he's away and just trying to run everything from a little laptop. I don't know if it's because I messed up and set something wrong in our sound settings. Let's be honest, right? It's two entertainers that shouldn't be in charge of sound. So this is my wholehearted apology. If the sound is utter rubbish, it's completely and utterly my fault somewhere along the line. There you go. That's about it. What I think it was, Jesse, you know, sometimes when you talk and the other person's speaker sends it out too loud and it comes back in their microphone, I think it was a bit of that and just making it go every so often. So you watch, Jesse will listen to it now and just go, no, we are not doing this show. We're doing a different one because that was awful. just the other day, Jesse, we were talking about how we're getting more and more professional and we're trying to make things better and better. And now we're putting out a show that Paul Newton was in charge of the sound.
I was
going
to say, and then Jesse was off sick.
Jesse was off sick. We left Paul doing the sound and Paul grew up under Heathrow's flight path. don't let him do sound. It's not a good move. Jesse, anything else you want to say before we start the actual interview?
No.
Awesome. Ladies and gents, we're going to go to a quick sponsor message and then we're going to go to the interview with Steve Hewlett. See you in a sec. Bye-bye.
Newton's Nuggets.
Jesse, how do you like your nuggets?
I like mine crispy. How do you like yours?
Smooth.
Newton's Nuggets is sponsored by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming, champions of the world. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off with the code Newton. That's 20% off with the code Newton at the checkout. And make your nuggets delightfully smooth. Manscaped.com.
Newton's Nuggets.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you for listening to the sponsor. You know it helps the show. Just support those guys if you can. So the kind of stuff that we're interested in. And for this show, I've already... Oh, he's messing about already. Do you know what? I should expect this stuff, really. Ladies and gents, I want to introduce you to a buddy of mine. We haven't worked together enough, but we're...
Am I on? I didn't know I was on. Yeah, sorry. I was going to show you my T-shirt. I didn't know I was ruining it.
You're permanently on. Well, actually, no, it's up to Jesse if you're on, because he edits this, and he tries to make me look good. He'll make you look amazing, but with me,
okay.
I think he's given up. Right. So I'm already in the bit.
Put the hat on.
I'm halfway through the bit where I introduce you. Okay. Right, ladies and gents, here is the amazing Steve Hewlett. Steve, do you want to say hello to everyone?
Hello. How are you doing, everyone? Everyone, all of you, every single person. How are you? Both of them. My mum. Hey, it's good to see you, Paul.
Mate, it's good to see you as well. It's been...
I can see you twice. Four eyes. Look at you.
I know. You have to be nice about the photo because Jesse, the guy who edits this, is the one who took the photo.
I love it, Jess.
See? Brilliant. Got to be nice, otherwise he'll make you look worse than you actually are.
Okay, and I'll call him by his proper name, Jesse, and not Jess.
Mr. Jesse. Sir Mr. Jesse.
Okay.
He's not well today. He couldn't join us today because he's really not feeling well. So he sends his apologies and his love, and he'd love to meet you sometime. But he's not being far too important. Mate, he's not well. He's not well. Steve, right. I've warned you a little bit about the show, as in I've warned you there's not much format.
I love no formats. You've worked with me many times. I have no format. I'm doing pantomime this week, supposed to be learning the script. You know, Mr. Paul Merton. Steve Hewlett doesn't do scripts, but I've got to learn a script. And
you're
every day,
a script.
I know. Don't tell them, but I don't think it's going to go in.
Don't they know who I think you are?
that's the person that I know that you're thinking about. That is me. That person,
mate. Yeah. Saying that, do you remember I did a show for you ages ago, and you said, "Paul, you've got 10 minutes. It's really strict," and I ended up doing like 22 or something.
I know, I had a 15 acts on. I know. All my shows are mammoth, though, aren't they? Epic.
Mate, that was mental that night. It was brilliant. Yeah, it was a brilliant night, and we did a great thing for a good reason. So I was very chuffed about
that. That was for Nathan Sorchak down in Brighton, wasn't it? It was great. We saw his family last week. It's so lovely to see them. But obviously, more tragic, reasons for getting together. But it was, thank you for doing it, mate, because that night is memorable for many people.
I don't know if you know, the night before that, I totaled my car and I had to get a hire car to come and do your gig.
Are you kidding me?
No.
It's annoying, isn't it, when it costs you to do a gig? I've done that so many times.
Real money to do it.
Yeah.
But honestly, it was worth it. It was lovely.
Good. Saying about paying to do a gig and it being worth it, when I was 20, I saw an ad in the Stage asking if you would want to work at the London Palladium in a variety show. I contacted the guy. His name was Kevin Graham. He was producing a show that he wanted to put on, but he needed a few acts to pay some money to do the show. And so initially he said, I need £1,200 from two comedy acts. I did it. Dee Quimby, a female comedian, did it. And then I took a loan out, my first ever loan when I was 20. That loan was £2,000. And then after I got that, so I thought, I'll give him £1,200 and I'll have £800 just to have a bit of fun with. And then when I took the loan out, he said, oh, I only need £500 now. So I've got this massive loan in the bank account. I gave some of it to my mum and dad and bought me best mates and presents. And then I just spent £500 and worked at the London Palladium. And it got me my first lot of debt doing that show. So. But it was worth it.
So you got into entertainment to get into debt?
I paid to get into entertainment. I'm still paying to get entertainment now. Everything I put on costs money. But we do this for a passion, don't we, Paul? We do it because we love it. And I love this business.
We don't do it to be rich, I don't think.
Well, I haven't done. So my wife would tell you that.
But then again, Steve, I do love it. Right, stop it. Stop being interesting. I meant to ask you a question. And then, right, first question, okay? And that question is, Steve, I know who you are and I love you to bits, but my two listeners might not know you. So can you explain who you are and why people should listen to me and you chat for about 30 minutes?
Okay, well, firstly, I love your two bits as well. I don't know what two bits they are, but I love your two bits.
Thanks.
But you know what? I don't know. I don't know why people should listen to us talk. We come probably from similar backgrounds, right? White walls and a picture on the wall. No, we come from, we've grown up doing, you do magic, I do ventriloquism. Those worlds always collide, but we've done different work. We've met on a couple of gigs, but we've got interesting backgrounds in show business, haven't we? And we know a lot of the same people, but we know a lot of different people as well. And it's such a small world and a small business that we've all got interesting anecdotes and stories to talk about. So you could talk about someone and that will trigger a story and it will trigger for the next 30 minutes loads of funnies. And so that's what we want to do, is create a little smile for people. And it's just two comedy acts and speciality acts colliding, really, with anecdotal mastership of comedy.
And is that enough? Mastership of comedy, that is the title for the whole show, mate.
I don't even know if they are words.
I think you made something up that is just going to be special.
Most of that.
And I think Jesse is just going to cut that into a little clip that will follow you for years.
I thought he's going to cut that out completely.
No, he's going to go, this will annoy them. Let's just keep putting this back out everywhere. Right, so we met. We met after you'd done BGT. You needed help with a magician coming to do a gig. And I came down, and for the show that I remember, all the way over in Kent, I think it was, I was out in the audience doing close-up stuff while you and your guys got the stage show ready. And honestly, mate, I can remember watching your act and you had me wetting myself with laughter literally from the get-go.
You sure that was me?
Oh, well, there was quite a few acts on that night. No, seriously, I love what you do. I've loved ventriloquism ever since I was a kid. But you just have such a talent for it, mate. I absolutely love watching you.
That's very kind. Thanks. I love doing what you do.
And you've got to hear laughter. It's brilliant. I love it. I do love it. So why did you go into ventriloquism? Where did you start? I know you've done loads of ship work. I know you did the BGT thing. But what started Steve Hewlett going, do you know what? I'm going to put my hand up this puppet's backside and see what happens.
It was a bit like that. But it was, I think it's because I had a few things happen at the same time, you see. So there was New Faces, 1987. This is the impact it had on me. Jimmy Tamley, great ventriloquist. He was like 32 years old. He lived down the road from me. And the reason I sat down to watch him on the final of New Faces, November 1987, was because he lived 5 minutes from my house. And so one of my best mates, Diddy, at school, lived opposite him. And he said, did you see that ventriloquist last night? I said, yeah, we voted. We phoned up my nan, told her to vote. All of our family voted around Basingstoke, and that's where he lived. And he said, well, he lives opposite me. I said, no. Can I meet him? And then I walked to school with him the next morning, right? This is a night, the day after the finals.
Yeah.
And so literally 24 hours after he won, became a, a great success on television. I knocked on Jimmy Tammy's door before school, about 8 o'clock in the morning. Don't do that. I've learned that since. And so I just said, can I have your autograph? He signed me a 10 by 8 in his dressing gown. And then we didn't sign it in his dressing gown. He was wearing a dressing gown and he signed the picture. Anyway, I've got such a big family. I went back nearly every day that week to get them separately signed for my family members. And then literally within 2 weeks of that first meeting, I was fascinated by what I saw actually on that show, New Faces. A man standing there looking really smart, you know, good looking guy. He had a puppet. He was getting laughter. And it was the laughter and the visuals that I fell in love with that night, November 28th, 1987. And so 2 weeks after he won New Faces, my sister comes home from school with a ventriloquist dummy. She said, my mate just cleared this out of his garage. He doesn't want it. I said, I'll have it. She says, you can have it for £10. And I said, well, I had a paper round at the time. I was on £4 a week, right? I said, can I give you £5? And she said, no, it's £10. I said, well, I'll give you £1 a week for 10 weeks. About a week later, she was bored with it. She said, just give me a fiver. So it was my first HP. I paid £1 a week for 5 weeks. I paid it off. My first debt I paid off. And then the dummy was mine. I took it down Jimmy Tamley's house. I said, look what I got. What do I do now? And he said, look, you look really interested. And if you're keen, there's a book coming out this Christmas called Got the Gear by Ray Allen. Go away. And we said go away in a nice way, but you probably meant it in a rude way. go away and learn. Get this book for Christmas and learn. And if you're still interested, come back and I'll help. So I told my mum and dad about the book. That was the only thing I wanted to open that Christmas, this £15 book by Ray Allen. I sat down there. I learned it. Another 2 weeks passed. I went down with the book and with the dummy. He said, come in. We had a hot chocolate. We started chatting and laughing, and he could see the potential. And Jimmy Tammy gave me his time for 10 years. I roadied for him, so I paid back. And he'd give me a bit of pocket money, you know, sort of doing roadying for him, doing his music, carrying his props and carrying dummy on stage. He gave me more of a passion because we'd sit and watch VHS. I think I drove his wife crazy at the time, you know, because I remember him shouting upstairs, can Steve come up and watch, you know, Willie Tyler on the Paul Daniels Magic Show or Ron Lucas again, you know? And she was Canadian, Jane at the time. Is that, oh, Jim, can you come back next Tuesday? Because I'm busy, you know? So oh, Steve, not today. Can you come back a couple of days? So yeah, I keep going back and, you know, his wife got to know me. She said, okay, I'll put the hot chocolate on. And then Jimmy and Steve had our time watching Ron Lucas and all those great events on the Jimmy Tarbuck show. But he, you know, he gained a little friend as well. And it was, these days, it probably wouldn't happen. Do you know what I mean? No. But he was just such a great guy. And he's still my best mate to this day, Jimmy. He's one of the funniest men I know, one of the kindest. He just gave me so much time. And he's always been generous and just, I love him. I love him like a brother. And you know, we're godfather to each other's kids as well. So that's how close we really got. And so, yeah, that was Jimmy Tammy. He gave me the passion to do what I do. And I think because I respected him and he taught me to sort of, you know, work the stage, how to work the stage. And we'd come back after a gig. And if it was a struggle, like an army base or something, he'd tell me what was wrong. The lighting was wrong. The sound was wrong. I was not performing in the right area. I should have been over here. He would give me, I wasn't wearing the right clothes. I went on during dinner. I should have gone on after dinner. Every possible scenario of working an audience or a room, Jimmy taught me everything. At the end of each night, when he dropped me off, it was a 1 hour or 3 hour drive. He dropped me off just outside my house and go, that was your lesson for tonight. It always gave me great lessons on the way back for hours. We talked for hours. And then we put on the Beach Boys. He introduced me to the Beach Boys. Not literally, but he'd play great music, you know? And I'm fascinated by the Beach Boys as well. So we've shared a lot. We've shared comedy, we shared ventriloquism, we shared, you know, our families. We shared hot chocolates, cups of tea and toast. We've got a lot of you know, similar sort of hobbies and stuff as well. And I adore the man. I think he's a wonderful person.
Mate, I love that. How old were you in 87?
I was 12 and Jimmy was 32. So he's obviously still 20 years older than me. I'm 46, he's 66 and he still looks 46, bless him.
I don't like him now.
No, I know, he looks my age. I'm 46, but he still looks 20 years younger. And he's still got the passion. He's just such a lovely, spiritual, really great person, you know. And I love chatting with him. It's been very difficult the last few months. We have had a few chats. One of the chats we had last year, 2020, lasted 4 hours, 45 minutes. We didn't realize we'd been on that long. I've never been on the phone to anybody that long before. And we laughed about it, you know. He said, we won't talk for that long again, but we've done a couple of hours or an hour and a half. But yeah, we could just talk forever. So we, like once a year, we try and meet up and have like a hotel for a night. And that sounds wrong. We call it like our little vent convention. We'll get down, we'll go down and have dinner, then we'll write loads of routines together, write each other jokes.
Yeah.
And then shake each other's hand, have a hug and say, see you next year, you know. But we'd always, if we're passing each other's house, we'd always stop off. But we talk regularly. Yeah, so it was really good of him to do that. But he's put the passion in me. Now I'm, you know, Keith Harris became, I was really close with Keith as well. And Keith always told me, he's heard feedback and stuff about, not just about my acts going down okay, but he said, people enjoy me backstage. He said, you're just keep being you, you know, and he keeps saying, he's hearing good feedback that I find it difficult to say, but he says, I'm a really nice person to work with. And that's what people were saying. And I've always remembered what Keith said to me about that. You know, so Jimmy's taught me the foundations of the ventriloquist act. Keith Harris taught me just to be a great person, you know, and keep doing that wherever you go. And I'm hoping just naturally that has always been the way, but it's so nice to have your peers actually, you know, comment on that.
Once people meet me and we get on and then people, you know, when you get on with somebody, they connect you on Facebook or something.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that go, oh, you know, Steve. Yeah, I know Steve. And they're like, do you actually know Steve? Or is it just you've gigged? And it's like, no, I know me and Steve get on fine. And then they go, he's lovely, isn't he?
Oh, you've been talking to your mum.
Yeah, just me and your mum. Your brother, he calls you something completely different. But that's...
Yeah, Dave, I know what it begins with as well.
I'm not going to say because you might spit your drink out all over me. But no, I do. I love your brother to bits. He's just so down to earth. But everyone that knows you does say your reputation is brilliant and you're so nice to work with.
Thank you. That's kind. Probably not everybody, but it's nice. It's not, you know, everyone's different, aren't they? And it's nice. I think it really is important actually to turn up to a gig, present yourself, you know, and just respect the person who's putting the bins out, respect the person who's bringing you on stage. The people who are serving the drinks, everybody in this, as we know, in the last 2 years, we're all in this together on this planet, you know, and we should all be equal, you know, and you know that, you know, news wise, it doesn't turn out that way, but I really wish everybody respected everybody and we could all get on. But it's a strange world.
But this is it, mate. We work in an industry that's known for having its divas. And I honestly think the more people out there working like you and I do, and you know, boosting up as many people as we can, mate, let's keep the good reputation of our awesome industry going and let's have some fun getting back.
We could do that, but the divas are loaded though, we're skint.
So. Well, what we're going to do is, don't tell anyone, right, but if I just get into a room with them, I'll hypnotize them, they can give us a lot of their money and then we can make them disappear into obscurity.
Yes. Now you're working for a cult. I like that.
All of a sudden, the whole podcast has changed.
Straight into panto mode.
So that's where you started, right?
Yes.
Then you started getting yourself small gigs, proving yourself. How did you then move on from the roadie for Jimmy to starting your own act?
Well, I was quite prolific, really. No one would notice, but I was quite prolific. I've got a couple of trophies, talent competitions. I would turn up to talent shows with me dummies in the box and I would hear the singers or the dancers go, oh, Steve's here, we might as well go home. I'd probably done about 30 talent shows, right? Around, yeah, in the mid 90s up until 97. So it would be like 94, 95 up until 97. I think 97 was one of my last ever talent shows. But I'd just turn up, I'd do my 15 minutes, I'd be first, second, or third, but I'll always get into the final because it was all singers and it was all dancers. You might get a magician or an impressionist, but it's very rare. And so I'm turning up, I'm doing a bit of puppeteering, my lips weren't moving, and I wasn't very confident. I didn't have any, you know, hardcore comedy or anything in the act. It was just passable, really. I look back at it and I cringe anything I'd done in my 20s, literally. But it worked back then because there weren't many. Ventriloquism was dying in the 90s, you know?
Yeah.
And so Ron Lucas came over and he made it big again. So when I started, I had Jimmy Tammy, Keith Harris, and Ron Lucas to look up to. And I went to the Ron Lucas show and met him. He gave me advice as well. So I wanted it to sort of, you know, not die out. And I wanted to keep doing what it was nothing. There was nothing else I was going to do but ventriloquism, I think. It was something that was always instilled in me from that day I saw Jimmy on TV, you know. So I started to do these talent competitions and I started to win them. So within those like 6 to 8 years, I won around £10,000 in prize money. And then I think I had 3 finals in 1 week, but I was working in the factory when I was 22 years old. So because I was doing a few summer seasons or, I need to tell you. So I was doing talent competitions, like 16 to 22. And then I had this holiday park job I saw in the back of the newspaper. So I went to Barry Island when I was 17 with my mum and dad. And I took a puppet with me that I was doing in talent competitions at Barry Island, South Wales. And I said to the guy, John Oliver, who worked the band and booked all the blue coats, I said, can I do 5 minutes? He said, oh, if you do 10 minutes, I'll put you on tomorrow night. I'd done 10 minutes, come off stage. He said, do you want a job? Do you want to be a blue coat? I said, yeah, but I've got a job. I worked in like a M&W, which was like a, you know, just the local shop. I said, got to hand me notice in. So can I come back in 2 weeks? He said, yep, the job's yours. I was 17, you had to be 18, but he still let me come back. So I'd done my first blue coat work for 3 months, the last 3 months of the season. And then looked in the stage newspaper when that finished, 1993. And then 94, I went to the Isle of Wight, done the same thing again, Wycliffe Bay Holiday Park as an entertainer. I was there for 6 months. And I went from there to the London Palladium because I looked at the stage and they were looking for, as soon as I finished in October in the Isle of Wight, the London Palladium was starting Oliver, the musical, Lionel Bart's Oliver. And they needed front of house staff and ushers. So I applied and got the job. So I was at the Palladium for 9 months. Then I started to do talent shows around London.
Yeah.
And then I went to Cyprus and Blackpool to do summer seasons. And then it built. So my act was getting longer and building. Then when I was 22, done my first showcase. And that showcase got me 100 holiday parks. Bryan Lane, down on the south coast. 100 holiday parks at nearly every night, £100 a night that was. And that was my first summer season in 1997. 98, 99, I started to just do all the Haven parks around the whole of the UK. And so my grafting really was holiday parks, Paul. That's where I really, you know, sort of got the act together and got my first 45 minutes in 97.
Mate, what an audience to learn from. I mean,
brilliant. They're family audiences. They're the BGT crowd. Do you know what I mean? Yes. They're the holiday park crowds. I built that audience up. I know what they want. And I could do a holiday park now and I'll love it because I know exactly what they need. And so but it's slightly different these days, the audiences, to what they were 20 years ago. But they still want to listen. And if you're visual and funny enough, they'll stay with you for 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, and in their head, that 45 goes past so quickly because they're just having so much fun when they're with you. And like we were saying, before we started recording, we bumped into each other at a holiday park gig a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And they put us in the same dressing room and And yeah, again, mate, I just love watching, I love seeing your act, but more, I love watching the audience's reaction.
Yeah,
especially those kids that haven't seen you before. Because they kind of do this, oh, here we go, this bloke's going to try and be funny. And then all of a sudden, they're with you, and they're with Arthur, and they love all your other characters that just start popping up. And you just see these kids that are aged between 5 to 15 go from, who's this bloke stood in front of us, to, oh, my word, this is amazing. Mum, Dad, this is amazing. Mum, look. And it's beautiful to see. It kind of reminds me of the reason I love doing Panto. I haven't done Panto for a while now because finances. Unfortunately, the pay for Panto is not the best when you're an unknown person.
Yeah, and when you do corporate gigs at Christmas, you could earn a lot more, can't you, for less work. It's hard work.
Yeah, I can go and do a corporate gig and I can earn the same money for a whole week of doing Panto, which is nuts in my head.
All right, mate, don't rub it in. I'm doing Panto. I've started today.
Yeah, you've literally just gone into rehearsals, haven't you?
Today is the first day of Panto rehearsals. We're working in Milton Keynes at the Chrysalis Theatre and Peter Pan. And I haven't done Panto for 6 years, so I'm a little rusty with learning scripts. Like me and you have spoken earlier about learning lines and scripts. I'm really not great at learning lines, but I tried to learn them as much as I could, getting into, you know, trying to be off book on Monday. We've only got 5 day rehearsals, and today we had to learn a whole dance routine. I didn't even know the song. I still don't know the song, but we're learning a 5 minute dance routine. Close the first half, man. Right. This is hard work. That's only 4 minutes of a 2.5 hour Panto.
And do you know, but, I watch some of these dancers that are in Pantos, and I just think, no, I'm never, ever keeping up with that again. No, not happening.
That's crazy, isn't it? It's brilliant. Dancers, it's the hardest working people in show business, dancers. And I've hosted the Thursford Spectacular when I do the Christmas show up in Norfolk, or Chroma, the Chroma Beer Christmas show. Just watching the dancers blows me away. They're there 2 months before the comedian turns up, you know what I mean? So I always feel bad about turning up and then getting the laughs. And these dancers are incredible. You know, any dancer that puts their heart and their soul into their foot movements. And take my hats off to them today. Me just trying to learn to dance today. You know, it's not easy.
Mate, this is it. I think that's part of the reason I always have to be comedy in some way, because then when I mess it up, I can pretend it was part of the act.
Yeah. Well, no, I talk without moving my lips, but I wish I could dance without moving my hips.
I'm so coming to see your Panto now, just to heckle you every so often.
Yeah.
So when you're right, so you've started to create an act. You've created an act, and you've done it under baptism of fire of holiday parks. Okay, and I say that with as much love as possible, because those audiences are truly amazing. They want to be entertained, but you've got to be good.
Okay. Yeah. Working class families as well. You know, they work hard to save up for their holidays, and so you've got to give them the best that they deserve.
Yes, you have. I completely agree with you, mate. And why not? And I just think they're brilliant little theatres as well, some of these holiday parks. Yeah. Absolutely stunning theatres that you can entertain in. But then, so what happened next? You've now got a well-honed act. I know that you're always developing new ideas and new things, but what happened next? You're now hitting, you know, the 2000s, you're 22 years old, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think the entertainment industry is a great business choice.
It'd be very difficult to start now, I think.
Wouldn't it?
Yes. Well, I was 22 and I turned professional when I was 22. So when I won that, I had these three talent competitions all in 1 week, all the finals.
Yeah.
And I came first, then I came second in one, and the last one, I won it, and it was $2,500. And but the last one that I did was in Bournemouth, and the judges were Dave Lee, great comedian, bless him, God rest his soul, and Amanda Holden. So Amanda Holden in 1997 judged my last ever live talent competition.
No way.
And, yeah, that was strange. Yeah, to think what was going to happen 15 years later. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if she remembered. She must have remembered it was me, but She championed me on the show. So she must have thought, oh, this is that young kid who won that talent show in Bournemouth. He's still doing it. So I'm going to give him a shot, you know. So maybe it helped. I don't know. But so I turned professional after I won those talent shows. I gave up my factory job. I said, look, I can earn money as a ventriloquist. I'm going to give you, a couple of weeks. I'm going to have to leave the job because I've got a showcase. And that showcase got me that 100, comedy part dates. I was very lucky, actually. It was that time when I was 22. I had the confidence then to say, I've got 45 minutes. I can, is there an agent out there to give me the work? And the agents gave me the work. I was doing Wally Dent showcases, Brian Lane, Trevor George showcases. And they gave me fantastic season. And so in 2000, because I'd done a couple of years of holiday parts, 2000, I auditioned for Trevor George Entertainments and George put me down in Babbicom Theatre. And I auditioned to do the Matt Pro summer season. And I'd done it in Babbicom and I got the job, but the job was in Eastbourne. So I lived in Basingstoke. So I drove to Eastbourne. I moved in with a guy called David Chant, who does theatrical digs, I stayed with him and then started to do the summer season there. There was a guy called Tucker on it, Mike Samuels, Jerry Law, and some great dancers as well. One of them I married, actually. And so I met her in 2000, 21 years ago.
I won't say her name because my other half's funny about her name being said, so I'll leave that up to you.
Oh, it's Nina. I was an ambulance. So we got together, and then we went down to Babbicom the next year because they said, would you come to Babbicom? I said, only if Nina comes with me. So I stole their dancer. We went down there. And then, so I've done now, transitioned in from holiday parks to theatre. Then I got a job on a cruise ship. So Fred Olsen offered me a cruise ship, a 6 months contract doing like 2 weeks cruises. But they said you could bring your girlfriend on with you. And so I wrote Nina into the act and she would bring dummies on stage with me. And she'd duet with a dummy. She'd do a little song or a dance with it.
Brilliant.
Just to get her in the cabin, So we'd done 2 years on cruise ships together. So that was amazing. So now I've done holiday parks, cruise ships and theatres. And then pantomime came along. So I started doing my first pantomimes. And that's it, really. Once you start to get into all that, it's just like, what's next? I started to do a little bit of television, but I didn't do any notable television really until 1997. I'd done a show called The Big, Big Talent Show, but I didn't make any impact. But I did, so it was BGT, obviously, that was the big break for me.
Yes. Yeah. Was that a difficult choice? Did you?
Yes.
Because I know the story from when we've chatted without any recording equipment around us.
Yes.
So do you want to tell how you got onto BGT?
I don't know if I've gone as far back as what I'm going to go back now. So I don't know what year it was, but I was probably 2015. It's way before 2005, I think. There was, 2005, 2006, I was managed by a guy called Brian Marshall, and he saw that there was this TV show called Paul O'Grady's Got Talent, and Paul O'Grady was with ITV at the time, and so I auditioned for that and went down great. It was only three producers watching, but I went down really well, and I think Paul Berlin, came with us. I met a guy called Damon Scott there. And Phil Melbourne, who was also managed by Brian, great comic. And so we went there, auditioned, and then heard nothing of it. And then Paul O'Grady moved to Channel 4. So Paul O'Grady's Got Talent got scrapped. Then Simon Cowell bought it. So my name, I guess, was on file because in 2007, when it started, six or seven, I got an email from Britain's Got Talent asking if I wanted to do it. I said, no, I don't fancy it. I think we watched the first year and I thought, oh, no, maybe, because there was quite a few amateurs on there. I just thought, I don't think this is for, professionals.
Yeah.
So I watched it the second year And then the third year, and then you started to see a couple of your mates on it. I mean, Paul Berlin did it, you know. So and Damon Scott, who was on the very first show, was fantastic, great puppeteer. So I thought, okay, but professionals do it. But I turned it down every year for 7 years because I was always on cruise ships. I got the cruise ship bug, you know, so I started doing ships in straight after Panto or summer, Christmas seasons. And so on year seven, when they offered it to me in 2013, I didn't take any cruise ships after Panto because I said to my Nina, we've just had a baby. I'm going to have a few months home with you. So there was no work in January, and February is a bit iffy as well. But I thought, okay, I can just be dad. We paid our tax bill. Let's just be dad. You know, we're paying the rent. Everything's fine. Yeah. I got a phone call from ITV saying we're doing a brand new variety show. Because it used to be these old phones back then, you know. And so I answered the phone and I said, oh, brilliant. I said, can you email me these details? They emailed me and the title of it said Britain's Got Talent. I thought, oh, that's how they get you in, you see. They say it's a new variety show and then because it's a different researcher, they have hundreds, but they don't research. And so I see that it's BGT. I think I emailed back and said, oh, it's not my cup of tea. They phoned me back and they said, Steve, there's an audition next week at the London Palladium. If you want to do it, it's yours. And I went, oh, it's at the Palladium. Yeah, I used to be an usher there. That would be nice just to do another gig at the Palladium. I picked the phone up again, see, and I said, okay, yeah, all right, I'll probably come and do that. So I told them when I'll be there on a Wednesday. I auditioned. I got the standing ovation. I'd done 6 brilliant minutes. They only showed 20 seconds, I think, on the audition part. They never featured mine at all. But when I did it, and I wish I had the recording of that Palladium, it was electric. It really was. And it was so nice. You could see Ant and Dick laughing in the wings, all the judges crying with laughter, you know, and the whole audience standing up. They don't show that with everybody. And it's very sad. So, and I didn't have anybody in the wings when I come off. I just walked out into the streets and it was just me. There was no one I could hug, you know. Nina had to be home with our baby. And so it was, yeah, it's quite sad to not have anybody there when you go down so well, you know. But that was my big moment. And I thought, okay, that's great. I'm bound to be on the show. They've got to show that. And so that's how I got it, really. And it went really well after that.
But it's weird, isn't it? When you get to that point of it, it's actually a scarily big commitment because they want your commitment for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. I remember standing as soon as just before I went on for the audition. Yeah. I heard a few buzzes and I heard people being really nervous and I was on my own. I phoned up Nina earlier in the day and I said, Nina, I don't think I want to be here because I've been there for half a day and I just thought, I don't think this is for me. I'm really nervous. I don't think I should risk it. So I had a lot of doubt in the daytime. And I did say to Nina, I think I want to come home. And I think she turned around and said, you know, do it and see how it goes, you know. So I stayed and I did it. And I'm glad I did it. I don't regret a moment doing that show. It's opened, as you know, it opened a lot of doors for me. But yeah. It was just a fantastic moment. So when I did go out there, I phoned them back up and they wanted to film me phoning my wife. But I was on camera and she knew I was talking a bit weird. She said, why are you talking like a weirdo? And I went, no, I'm being filmed. You know, pretend you're a surprise to hear from me. They didn't show any of that. They cut all that out. Because she was on loudspeaker.
It is weird, isn't it? Because you were a professional already, so you were treating it like a gig. Then you've got BGT who literally turn around to you and say, oh, we want your commitment for this long, but we might only use you for half a day.
Yes.
And yes, also, what you said about, I'm not sure about this, I'm completely with you there, because I believe that if somebody didn't like you, if some editor didn't like something about you,
or a judge, they could do that, and I think they kind of tried to do that. I think they were thinking, oh, he was all right, but I don't think we'll feature him that much. And because I remember when they were choosing the deliberation day, with Simon said, I don't think he was much. Amanda went, what are you talking about? He is the Royal Variety. So they ended up putting me through anyway, and it was exciting. And so I got through, but I think the reason why I was doubting it in the daytime was because the 15 years I've just told you about the holiday parks, the cruise ships and the theatre work, that could have just been wiped out. You know, that would have been irrelevant if I got a buzz. And you know, as a professional, if you're going to go on that show, you don't go down well, you'll get cancellations. Yeah. I did the Big Big Talent Show 15 years before. Gary Bushell was was one of the hosts. Jonathan Ross hosted it. And Gary Bushell would come on and give his little critiques. And he said something derogatory about me, which very rightly so. He said I was more wooden than my dummy, which is kind of funny. Right? And my dummy was made out of foam, so he wasn't completely right. But I agree with what he said. I was a bit wooden. I was so nervous, you know, like a rabbit in headlights. But when I did that show, it was, I just wasn't ready for television back then. You know? But, you know, I can't remember how I got into that story now, but it was something about doing that.
It's the reputation thing. If that had gone...
Yes, sorry, I do remember. I did that show, and because Gary Bushell said what he said, when it went out on air, I had a cancellation the next day, and they said, because of what Gary said, we can't risk putting him on because he's not strong enough. And so it does risk. And so I had that in the back of my mind with BGT. It is the biggest show on television, you know, at the time. So I thought, am I risking my career doing it? So I had a lot of doubt because I had no one in the wings to say, go on, get on there and do it. So.
But yeah, it's true. And right, I haven't done BGT. I've been asked a few times, but I haven't done it. And actually, me and you chatted about this when we were in Brighton. Now, the reason I haven't done it is because each of my mind-reading tricks needs setup time before you nail it and get the audience reaction. I don't, with the whole, we want to be impressed within 20 seconds, I don't think it's right.
Have you seen it recently, though? I think that there's so many mind readers and magic men, and in America especially, they're shown so many of the magic mind reading card things, or your chair thing is fantastic. I don't know if I've seen that, but you're saying that, and I think that they do actually love that sort of stuff now.
They're more open to it. Maybe I should just go to America and confuse them out there.
Just do it out there. Or Australia are taking people now.
That'd be quite funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I had an invitation on Twitter. Yeah, Petey Blinder. I was asked to do, last year, 2020, I was invited to America's Got Talent and Australia's Got Talent. And I said yes to both. And they both got cancelled. You know, so it didn't really happen. But the AGT thing, it ended up not happening in America for dodgy reasons. And then Australia, I actually accepted it, and then it got cancelled and all the judges flew home. So it's crazy really, because I would have done Australia's Got Talent, because but the world's a little bit of a mess, isn't it,
mate? It is. And we spoke before we started recording, we spoke about the fact that you're out doing panto now, I'm out doing gigs again, you've just done a shed load of gigs right before you walk into panto rehearsal. Yes. Absolute nutcase. You know that's going to hurt.
Yeah. I should have took 6 days off before panto, because I was busy 2 weeks ago. But then I thought, oh, my God, this is the busiest November I've ever had. It's like we had no work, and then May happened, and then everybody that didn't book me in a year and a half squeezed all the gigs into the last 6 or 7 months, and I accepted them all. I've been doing comedy clubs, theatres, corporate gigs, holiday parks, theatre. It's been crazy, but I've enjoyed nearly every gig, Paul. It's been so nice. You don't want to take it for granted, do you know what I mean?
No.
I appreciate every audience and every gig that I get. And I've done a lot of charity things as well. I've also done comedy clubs that don't pay as well as the other gigs, but I enjoy every audience and fingers in different pies. And so I'm enjoying that process. But the last 6 nights, I did need to rest and be home with my family. We moved house 4 weeks ago. I've not even been there. I mean, it's a lovely place to be as well. So I'm looking forward to Christmas Eve when I'm home.
Are you going to actually have like 2 days off for Christmas?
We got 3 days off.
No way. That's not fair. That's not panto.
It's unheard of, isn't it?
It's just wrong. How dare you have 3 whole days off?
Cheers.
So you did the BGT, I think, worked very well for you. And I think that's because you absolutely nailed it. You didn't go on there being a diva. You didn't turn into this big I am straight afterwards. Mate, you got the whole country behind you. And seriously, hats off to you for that, mate. So
good. Yes,
okay. And then not long after that, me and you got to know each other because you asked one of our mutual friends if she knew a magician that would help with a charity thing. And that was pretty much all the warning I got.
I'm quite renowned for that, asking if anyone's available to do my charity gigs.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you've called me a few times now. But do you know what? Since that first one that I did for you, and finances to one side for a second, I think on the first one, I said, look, I just can't afford to at the moment. I'm really strapped. And I believe you sent a message along the lines of, I'll pay your expenses if you're really good. And I went, all right, I'll prove myself.
Did I say that? I didn't think I'd say that.
Or do you know what? It might be
probably my wife. She might have said that.
It might be Karen to just turn around and went, Paul, you've got to be booming good.
Oh, okay, right.
That's quite likely to happen through her. but yeah, I remember coming along to that and having such a laugh and having such a great time with you, and the audience really wanted to be there.
It sold out, wasn't it? It was great. It was such a warm evening. And I put Haribo and Pringles in the dressing room. What more do you need?
Mate, you know what? You're so right, because all of us acts had different dressing rooms around the theatre, and all of us were just down in the green room where the Haribo and the Pringles were.
Got your digents, yeah.
Yeah, and it was literally, right, it's nearly showtime. Do you think you should all start getting changed now? Oh, yeah.
Stop eating M&Ms.
Yeah, we're meant to be working, sorry. But
that's the fun of it, isn't it? I've put quite a few events together, and all the acts that have turned up to these gigs, I always do it for a reason. There's always a reason I'm doing these shows, and it's because we've lost someone, and I wish we could just do them and then all the acts can get paid and we can do that, but people seem to turn up to charity gigs more, which is a shame, but maybe things will change in the future. But it's the camaraderie we get. It's like doing a pantomime, but you do big challenge, charity show. I've done about 5 or 6 now, and they've all nearly sold out, but all the acts backstage have said how much fun they've had just getting together, people in the green rooms. And I never get to see that because I'm chasing around, or my wife Nina's chasing around and making sure everything's working well. You know, you've got warm-up acts before the show starts. You've got to make sure everyone's got the tickets or it's just, I always put so much on there, 4 or 5 hours long. But everyone leaves that venue going, wow, we got money. You know, we spent the money and, We got what we deserved. It was brilliant, well worth the money. But we've raised money as well. And the people that I put the show on for is usually the family of the person we've lost. They gain something, you know. They don't just gain funds for their charity or whether it's a statue for Keith Harris. They gain a memory of that night, you know, and memory, whether it's photographs or just a song that triggers back to that night. They get closer to that person again. I do believe that. We've done it recently with Paul Eastwood. And we really felt like we were with Paul again on that night in Cromer just a couple of months ago. And that's one thing, you know, that we do really well in this business is respecting each other and paying tribute to each other. We do it so well, you know. And the Bobby Paul thing a couple of months ago, weeks ago, I really wish I was there because that looked amazing, Blackpool, you know.
Mate, it's awesome. And exactly what you just said, you know, their family that night, their family looked like they'd just been hugged by 1,000-odd people and just given a bit of a, we know this is crap, but we're here to help if we can. And you could see it. That was awesome, mate. Well done, sir. Actually, talking about charity stuff, am I allowed to ask you about the Water Rats?
Yes.
Because
depends what you want to ask.
I need to do those eyes. Yeah, oh God, it does look like someone's just going to smack me over the back of the head in a minute, doesn't it? The Water Rats stuff, because I've seen you've been doing this for a while. And it just seems to me like you've met a group of like-minded people that are trying to help each other.
Yes.
Is that a fair assessment of that group?
Well, that is what the Water Rats are, you know. It started off in 18... Oh, I shouldn't have started with the dates. 1898, 1890. It started in the late 1800s, right? Yeah. 130, 133 years ago. And it was a group of entertainers that would just get together, and they got together just to have a laugh and then raise a few coins, really, for some charities. And then they started to get together and then build it up. And it just became this big thing where it's never more than 200 members in the Grand Order.
Well, they have a champion of members.
Yeah, 200. And it's sadly, it never really reaches that because we only have like three lodges. I mean, every 3 weeks we have like a lodge throughout the year. But I guess it's only about 20 lodges a year that we have. And we only bring in about maybe eight to 10 members, new members. But equally, we lose about 5 to 10 members a year. In COVID time, we've lost 12 members of the Water Rats. Lionel Blair was our last, you know. Excuse me. And so it's, yeah, we've had some great legends within the order, but it's a fantastic thing to be part of. You know, I'm sat in lodge with the great comedian Dougie Brown, who's our king rat. He's 80, you know, and he loves it there. We love seeing him there. Chris Emmett, a radio god, is Prince Rat, and he's sat opposite him. Rick Wakeman sat there, and, you know, there's rock gods in there. There's comedy geniuses and actors and agents and musicians. And it's just an amazing thing to be around. It's like a giant panto every 3 weeks. And we're not always able to go in, you know, because it's a work in order. So a lot of the rats are working. And the ones that are retired, they come in. We got Derek Martin, who was Cat Slater's dad, you know, in EastEnders. He's brilliant. And I started a WhatsApp group in 2020 just for the rats. And there's about 30 of the 200 that are on it. Or there's about 160 rats in the order at the moment. But about 30 of the rats are on the actual group. But Derek Martin does 2 or 3 jokes a day. So I just look at, oh, Derek's doing another joke. I have a little titter and get on with my day. But it's so nice to sort of connect. I wanted to connect them because it stopped. You know, everything stopped last year. And so we had some great Zoom meetings at one point. Kev Orkey and Great Brother Rat sorted out for us. And then we had the WhatsApp group, which is still going. We don't need it because the lodges are back again. But I went to the last lodge, but I can't go to the next one because I'm here in Milton Keynes. But I love it. I love that I have got a whole brand new group of friends. That's how you see it. You know, there's probably over 100 people there. I know all their names when they come in. And it's Frank Bruno is a Water Rat. And in February, there's a dinner, a lunch, especially because we've not been able to do a ball for 2 years. We're having a Water Rat's lunch to honour Frank Bruno as a brother rat. And there's going to be funny stories, some great entertainment, brilliant entertainment. And so we're doing that in February, you know, because we've not been able to do a ball this year as well. So there's still loads of things going on. I remember I haven't met Frank Bruno, right? Because he hasn't been into lodge when I've been there. But I remember doing a charity thing in London once. London Taxis, black taxi firm, right? They do a children's charity Christmas party every year. And about 8-9 years ago, I went and did a show for them. They booked me. And I did about 15 minutes on the stage, and then I had to go down and sign autographs. I thought, well, no one's going to come and sit near me and ask for my autograph. But they did. Some of them came down, and you had to sit down next to another celebrity and then move on. And so I sat down here signing me little pictures of our Foot Lager. And Joe Swash was there, King of the Jungle, Joe Swash. Next to him was Frank Bruno. And next to him was Barbara Windsor. So I was the only one I'd never heard of, right? That line. But if you're ever going to get a selfie, get it that day, you know? And I never got that selfie. Loved Babs Windsor, and I loved But, you know, I think she must have seen me work. She looked over and went, "You're all right, Steve," you know, and that warmed my heart, you know, that she knew who I was.
Yeah.
And he was laughing next to me as well. It was so nice to be part of. But I wanted to go up to Frank because we were signing. And by the time I got up, finishing signing, he was gone and let out. But I wanted to say, you know, brother, water rat, great to finally meet you, but I never got to meet him. But so there's so many water rats about in our industry. I was sent a jacket just a couple of days ago from Neil Crossland, who made suits and jackets for the stars. He used to make them for Strictly Come Dancing, Britain's Got Talent, Stars in Their Eyes. You know, he goes back 40, 50 years, Neil does. And I said, "Neil, he's a water rat." And I said, I have to have one of your jackets one day. So he measured me up a couple of weeks ago. I was doing a gig near him. I popped in. I said, "I'm near you." He said, "Come round." I had a cup of tea, took him a cake, and we had a lovely chat. And he just started measuring me. I think if you go around his house, he'll just measure you if you don't want to see. But he measured me up. He sent me this beautiful jacket, and it arrived at my house. It was there when I got home just before Panther. And so there's just really beautiful people within there. You do make friends in the Grand Order. But at the same time, we're raising funds for really great charities, and we help each other out. The rats helped rats out that needed it last year in tough times, you know. And so the Order is really there to help out people in the industry. But at the same time, we're entertainers, you know. We're out there doing what we do and doing what we love.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you said, mate. We've had 18 months of being locked away. And while we joke about it, our wives and our kids were probably going, "Well, you get out of the house.
Go to work. The same joke. God's sake." Yes.
Yeah. You and your hat, get out. But now we're back out again. I'm loving it, mate. I'm absolutely.
Are you enjoying it, mate? You enjoy it. It's nice, isn't it? It's a great
thing. The crowds are so happy to be there.
Yeah.
And they just want to be entertained by real, live, proper entertainment.
Yeah, or us.
Or me. It's when they look at me and go, "Who the hell is this one? Why is he wearing a trilby? And from the 50s, what are you doing?"
Nice hat, though, mate. It really suits you. I like it.
Thank you.
I feel like you've got a saxophone underneath. You're going to do a bit of UB40 or a little bit of, is it UB40?
If I was a better magician, a saxophone would now appear, wouldn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And you'd be going, "What the hell? You actually had one."
Yeah. Well, I know you don't blow your own trumpet.
But drums.
That only works a trumpet, it's not a saxophone. Sorry about the water. Because I'm talking a lot, in the pantomime, I have to keep drinking water.
So. Right, okay. I was going to ask you what's next for Steve, but we've mentioned panto a few times. And where are you doing panto now?
The Chrysalis Theatre. It's a brand new, it's like a community theatre, you know, and they've never had pantomime there before, so they thought they'd try it out. And Kev Orkian, it's kind of partnershiped with the Pantomime Academy. So Stephen Gordon Wilson messaged me on Facebook earlier this year and said, "You fancy doing panto?" I said, "Well, I am actually thinking about coming back to panto because I've been doing Christmas shows for about 6 years. Yeah. I thought, I kind of miss panto. So I'll do it. No one's asked me yet. So, you know, what do you want? What is it?" And he said, "Well, it's this, this and this." I said, "I'm happy with that. I'll come back to panto." And then a bombshell happened about a month later. Mr. Blobby's going to be in it as well. So I'm doubly happy, you know?
I'll be honest. I'm not sure if I'd be happy with that.
I'm really happy. I can't wait to be.
You're going to get in a lot of trouble with Mr. Blobby, aren't you?
Do you know what? We grew up in that era, didn't we? Of Emu, like Michael Parkinson in Emu and Mr. Yeah. Blobby and the house party causing chaos. That's what I want. I want to know my lines and scripts, but I want him to knock me over and go off script. And I want mayhem. This better be the real Blobby, the real deal, you know, because I'm excited. I've not met him yet. I'm on day one. I missed, this year, I missed the panto promotions because I got COVID. So I'm not in any of the photos. I've never met Mr. Blobby. So I've got that to look forward to. I think he's coming in on Wednesday.
See, this is it. You're saying about you've got to learn full-on script. I think as soon as that show opens, mate, the script is out the window.
He's not learning his lines, is he? What's all that about?
And you can just rip into it. He's going to send you flying off the stage. I think you're going to have fun, mate. I really, really do.
So, how can you not have fun? I've got really dear friends in this as well. And there's some really funny people. Luke Byford is playing my mum, Mrs. Smee. And he is brilliant. He's 21 years old and he's playing a dame, you know. He's fantastic. I've watched him today.
Don't say there's a talented 21-year-old.
No, it is annoying, isn't it? It's less than half my age, man. I mean, he's brilliant. Lucy Rollison, who's Rollo's daughter, she's playing Peter Pan. She's also the choreographer. She's a grafter. She's a hard worker. Brilliant. There's Pasha, the dog. Pasha, it's like a Britain's Got Talent show. There's actually a dog in the show, a real one, doing tricks and everything. We've got Mr. Blobby. We've got a magician, Kev Agate.
What? No, Kev, hold on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's a magician in it. Yeah.
Not happy now.
Well, I did. Which one are you? That's a joke from Snow White. Wrong one. Yeah, so it's a really, really nice variety show we're putting on here, actually, in the village. So, yeah, I'm really pleased to be back in Panto. But I think you were saying we've spoken enough about Panto.
I think we've plugged your Panto enough, because I'm going to try and get this show to go out halfway through the run and get you some more ticket sales.
Lovely. Brilliant.
But mate, fingers crossed. Do you know what? I just hope it's a sellout every night so you can just have a laugh every single night. And also, something I wanted to ask you about, because I've taken up too much of your time. You've got your own podcast running as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've loved that. That got me through the whole pandemic, to be honest, mate. And mentally and, you know, and physically, really. I had to be doing something. I couldn't just stop. Yeah. So I started to put some silly videos and stuff on, and I wrote some songs with a friend called Kevin Dean, 1 meter Rita, 2 meter Peter. We put them on YouTube. That was good fun. My wife Nina sang with Arthur Lager. And then I thought, oh, no, I need something else. You know, I'm doing loads of charity shows on Zoom. Didn't get paid really for any of them. My company furloughed me, so that was, you know, that just got us through. So what else can I do? I started to listen to podcasts and going for walks. And I listened to Debbie McGee's. There was The Comedian's Comedian. There's a couple of really good podcasts that I enjoyed. The Panto podcast as well. And I thought, oh, these interviews are good. I'm going to phone up a few friends and see if I can start one. So I called Jimmy Cricket and said, would you do like an interview with me, like what we're doing, but just over the phone, because they were all in lockdown. And I wanted the feel of everybody being at home in the lockdown era, you know? Yeah. And that's what I got. So Jimmy Cricket done the first ever recording that I did. And then I phoned up Jimmy Tamley, the ventriloquist who started me off. Paul Adams, Mick Miller. I started to phone all of my mates in the phone and go, oh my God, I'm loving this. So I got 10 out. And that's season one. Let's do another season. But I literally recorded about 50. And Nina says, shouldn't you edit these and start putting them out? I thought, oh my God, I've got 50 hours to edit. You know, and each episode took between 4 to 6 hours to edit. I spent hundreds of hours editing these things.
Yeah.
I've got about 112, 113 episodes that are now out there. The last one I did was Michael Aspel.
Michael Aspel, mate.
This Is Your Life, yeah.
You got Michael Aspel, yeah. Drew Cameron. I love Drew's stuff.
Drew's really brilliant. Do. Yeah, we had a good laugh. We did. Isn't really good.
And I saw you had Jimmy Tarbuck as well. And the one that I loved and kind of upset me as well was I spotted you got one with John Challis in it.
Yeah, that was sad. Yeah. It was really sad. It was a lovely chat. He's such a gent, John was. You know, we'd done a couple of things together. We'd done like one of these conventions together, you know, Phil the Force Day up in Peterborough.
And well, he was in the last Panto I did as well.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was Hook in Peter Pan in Croydon.
Was it Fairfield Halls?
Yeah, Fairfield. Wow.
Yeah, what a lovely guy. I mean, what a legacy he left as well. And he was so good to his fans. You know, he'd done a lot of these video messages for people, and I bought one. He'd done one for me. And then I said, John, will you do one of my podcast chats? He said, yeah, let's do it. So we did it. And then we lost John this year. In the 40th, because I was talking to him about the 40th anniversary of Owning Fools and Horses, and he passed away like a week before. It was so sad he wasn't there to celebrate that.
Yeah.
But what a great, great guy, actually. He really flew the flag for that show, you know. And yeah, and I loved John. He was brilliant. Really nice to talk to. We lost him. Sadly, I've lost three members of my podcast guests since we recorded. And Paul Eastwood, a great comic. You knew Paul, didn't you?
Yeah.
Paul,
yeah.
Paul, just a great stand-up. Just way too young. And then Phil Butler. It's been a really hard year. And losing these people for completely different reasons as well. And
like you said, far too young.
Terrible. But the beauty of the podcast is, if there can be any beauty of it, bittersweet as it is, I've got these little conversations with these guys who I adored, you know, and I'm so glad that I did it at that time, because I can go back and listen if I miss them. You go back and have a little listen to it, you know.
Mate, this is it. And these things will be out there. I think they're going to be out there longer than me and you are going to be on this earth. And I hope, doing Newton's, I loved it. And it helped me get through the pandemic, and it kept me
happy,
and it kept me entertaining people. But I honestly think there's some amazing nuggets of help and information in every single show that's going to outlive me, I hope.
Yeah.
Right, and actually, do you know what? That's a nice time to wrap up the show, because I've taken way too much of your time, mate. I promised it would only be like half an hour. That was a
great night. Mentioned the book, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, you need to write that book, mate. I'll be stood in line waiting to buy one. So the last question that I have to ask you, okay, everyone that listens to this knows why it started. They know it started with just me pointing the camera at myself and giving a nugget of helpful information once a week. So, Steve Hewlett, what is your nugget that you want every listener to walk away with?
This isn't really a nugget, mate. This is by the way, when it says Paul, when it says Paul Newell's nuggets, I thought it was just you sat there naked interviewing people.
You were hoping.
Anyway, let's get back serious, right? So it's not really a nugget. It's a little nudge and a reminder of people. I was just talking about losing a couple of people, and Phil Butler invited us to his 51st birthday party earlier this year. And I'm so glad I went. You know, in hindsight, now you think, God, I'm glad I went.
Yeah.
Someone sends an invite to you, just try and get there, you know, just try and go. Don't turn it down. Don't, you know, if you can't go, that's fine. But if you can go, just go, because we're not here that long. It's really weird. And I don't want to be depressing, but literally, you know, it's like, go to that party, because Paul Eastwood was at that party as well. We haven't got Paul, we haven't got Phil. So all I'm saying is just pick up the phone and call a friend that you've not spoken to, because you'll make their day and it will make you smile as well. Pick up the phone and talk to your friends. And that's all I've been doing for the past year and a half, really. And I've recorded most of them, as you know, on Eyes and Teeth, the podcast.
Good man. Thank you for that nugget, mate. That was absolutely gorgeous. And seriously, guys, if you're listening, just go and check out Eyes and Teeth. You'll get this man's attitude for roughly an hour in every show, and it's just fun. Actually, you know what? The next one that I've got to listen to is that mutual friend who first got us together, Miss Karen Dalton. I'm going to go and listen to that one and see
how well she did. A lot of people said they love her chat. Somebody said the other day, I really loved Karen Dalton's interview, Karen Williams. Yeah, so have a little listen to hers. And literally, I've got another 45 episodes to edit. I'm going to get season 10 edited while when Panto opens and the script is in my head. I'm going to edit 10 episodes in December to go out in January. And that is a cracker. There's a lot of magic on there, actually. And if you want to be on my podcast, I don't know if you want to be on the podcast, because you're doing the podcast. I'd love to.
But hold on, Steve, you've got people like Michael Aspel. You've got Jimmy Cricket. You've got Jimmy Tarbuck. I mean, then you're going to go and Paul Newton, who no one.
Yeah, but we've got some lovely little nuggets together, haven't we? So we've got loads to talk about.
Yeah.
How did you get to do what you do as well, Paul? You know, we're all important. And as I said, we're all on the same level. And it's just nice. Some people have had bigger careers than others. I've had an okay career. But then there's other people that have had massive careers. I've not made any money, but I love doing what I do. And you know, me and you are very mutual. We have a lot of similar jobs, and a lot of similar likes and people that we know as well. So I'd love to have you on the show. Because there's more things I want to know about you. You've learned so much about me today, but I'd like to know more about you. And tell me how you'll do that chair routine.
I finished that stage show with the chair routine, didn't I?
Yes.
That's brilliant. Right. Stop being interesting. I've taken too much time off you already. Just shush. Ladies and gents, that is Mr. Steve Hewlett. Honestly, from the bottom of my heart, Steve, thank you so much for being here. Do you want to say goodbye to everyone?
I'd like to say thank you very much to Jesse, and apologies for all the editing you're going to have to do, but great working with you both. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Jesse. Thanks to your audience. And if you have watched, thanks very much.
Seriously, mate, everyone needs a Jesse. I don't know how you do the interviews and the editing. That would drive me nuts. Jesse, he's right. You are awesome, mate. Ladies and gents, we're now going to go to a quick advert, and then it's going to be me and Jesse chatting about Steve behind his back, and he won't hear that until the show goes out. Actually, no problem. See you later.
Newton's Nuggets.
Support for Newton's Nuggets is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming champions of the world.
Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels.
Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0, all across Europe.
You heard that right, the 4.0.
You can join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you.
That's 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code Newton, NEWTON, at manscaped.com.
Newton's Nuggets.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for coming back.
Do you know what? I often think that people come and listen to this show, listen to the interesting interview, and just ditch the rest. I wouldn't blame them, to be honest.
Well, this chat about the interview is going to be really long this time, isn't it, Paul?
Mate, this is going to be interesting. So, before we introduced the show today, I explained that Jesse has been very ill. So ill to the point that I actually refused to send over any video work and sound work to you for a while, didn't I? Because I know what you're like. You'll go, oh, this is something. I could do a something on the something. I can work on that now. And I was like, no, just stop. So, Jesse, what did you think of the interview?
Paul, what did you think of the interview?
I literally just agreed before we recorded the intro and the outro that Jesse is well enough for me to send stuff over. I've given him the link about 20 minutes ago. There is no way he's heard any of this interview yet.
No, it's quite a long one as well.
Yeah, it is. I know what you're like. You'll cut some of it down as well because you're good like that. So we talked about Panto and the weirdness of being in Panto, and how much I love the Panto world, because I think it's the first real chance you get to get kids interested in going in theatres. And especially nowadays, when you've got things like Xbox and games and multimedia systems in everyone's houses, trying to get them to go and see a show in a theatre anyway is hard work. But when you're in that theatre and you've just got hundreds, if not thousands of people, just honestly gut-wrenching laughter, unless you've been there and experienced it, you just have no idea what I'm on about. And we were talking about the people that work on Panto. Steve will admit it. He's not the best dancer, and he says so in the interview. But then you watch the dancers who are working for next to nothing on pantomimes, and they're hitting their points every single time, and they are so professional, it's unbelievable. And then these theatre directors hire someone like me or Steve, and we get to just walk on and do almost whatever we want. Steve was upset in the interview because they're trying to make him learn lines. And it's like, and they know who we think we are. We don't do lines. And I explained that you do rip into me for my lack of line
scriptability.
Learning. Scriptability. Yes, yeah. Easy for you to say. But it's true. It's so true. And we had a chat about being on the road and the amount of times that we bumped into each other at gigs. And a while back, oh God, I'm going to get this wrong. A while back, I ended up at I did something at a holiday park over near Essex, I think it was. And I got there, and the person who was organising it all said, "Oh, I'm really, really sorry, you get, but we've got you sharing a dressing room with somebody called Steve Hewlett." And I was like, "Yeah, Steve, it's all good." And she was like, "Oh, do you know him?" Yeah. I know Steve. We go quite well. And then she was like, "Oh yeah, he's you know, big star. He's been in Britain's Got Talent. He's done this and he's done that." And when you're hearing somebody go fangirl over one of your mates, it's like, okay, yeah. And where we'd shared the dressing room, I swear the organizer had set it up for him, thinking, you know, megastar Steve, we're going to really look after him. And I walked in there and went, "Yay, they've left Pringles and drinks and sweeties. I'm good." and then, if I ever do shows for Steve, because we've now done a few stage shows where, unfortunately, we've been raising money for families of lost ones, people who, that in the entertainment world that have passed on, and their families don't know where to turn, what to do. And a few of us were put on a stage show. But it's kind of become a bit of a gag in the industry, in the circles that I'm in now, that if you do a charity gig for Steve, you don't need to eat for a week afterwards. Seriously, mate, every time he sets up, you'll have your own dressing room, or you'll be sharing a dressing room with someone good anyway. But then he'll set up a green room in one of the rooms as well, and there'll be sofas, and there'll be like 56 cans of Pringles. There will be so much Haribo sweets, it, you know, you could send a school in there and they wouldn't eat them all. And seriously, you end up with like, I don't know, between 10 and 15 entertainers in this room just talking utter rubbish with each other, just sat there eating Pringles, drinking Coca-Cola. And by the time we will leave this room, we're bouncing around like kids on speed or something. Like, "Oh, no, what's going on?" And then he lets us loose on stage. I see no problem with this.
So there you go, folks. All of you that think it's all heroin and cocaine in the background, it's actually Haribo and Coke.
Haribo, Pringles, and Coca-Cola. It really is. And you know what? That's why I like working with entertainers that are a similar age and attitude to me. Because we're all sat there, and then at the end of the gig, people are like, "Right, quick, are you going to go out to the bar to see your audience?" And we're all like, "But we can have a cup of tea." "Should we get a cup of tea? We can have a cup of tea, get a digestive, dunk that." Ooh, exciting. And that's yeah, so all of you that think that I'm in the drug-addled world. No, my biggest vice these days is sugar. That's it. And what else did we chat about? We chatted about charity. And the water rats. Now, I know that Steve's focus went more into charity gigs, and I remember when he joined the Water Rats a few years back now, I didn't really understand what it was. But the blatant and nice way of putting it is, it's a club for like-minded people that are in a similar industry, so they're all in the entertainment industry somehow. But it also reminds me of Freemasons. But they right. help each other, they look out for each other, and they make sure they're doing worthy causes as well. So, sounds awesome to me. Do you know what I mean? A bunch of people that are... Because you know how lonely it is in the wedding world. Because you're self-employed in that. You make all your choices yourself. To be honest with you, you've probably got a few people you bounce ideas off of, and I'm one of them. But it's still quite a lonely business.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. I've had a few things recently where I've spoken to either people I don't know at all or people who I've met a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I've just so happened to need to, you know, we've been organising something and I've needed to speak to them, which is relatively unusual for me. And it just made me giggle a little bit because they ended up being like hour and a half phone calls.
Yeah.
And I think it's just that need to talk to someone.
Yeah.
Because you're normally, the only time you see people is at the wedding.
Yeah. Where you're rushing around. And you have to put on your show face. Then
yeah, you're not relaxed chit-chatting to anyone. You are rushing around possibly doing the swan thing of, you know, looking calm on top, but running, you know, paddling away underneath. You don't get that, you know, state of the industry, things going on, chit chat. Like, you know, you don't get all of that sort of chat to other businesses like you would in a lot of different industries. So yeah, it's definitely, you get that that loneliness feel with the wedding industry, certainly.
And it's weird, isn't it? Because I know, and whenever me and you know, it's just a me and you filming session, whether we're together in person or whether we're doing it from through Zoom in our own offices. The amount of times we have to put extra time in because we need to chat through everything that's happened in the last week. And I know me and you bounce ideas and stuff around on each other all the time. That sounded bad again. That could have gone so wrong. We throw ideas around. Sounds better.
Sure.
But not many people have that. And it kind of reminded me of our chat with Brad Burton about finding your tribe.
Yeah.
About finding like-minded people that you want to hang out with and you want to push each other. Reminded me of the interview we did with Pippa as well. That hasn't gone live yet, so I'm not going to say too much.
No, that's going to be just before Christmas.
Yeah. I love that Jesse just looked at his notes and decided when it is. Well done, mate. Nice. That was awesome. But yeah, the whole finding your tribe thing, I think that's kind of what they've done. They've got like-minded people who want to help each other and want to help others. And it's just a bit of an add-on that they're all in the entertainment world.
Yeah.
From everything I see of them and everything I've seen them do, hats off to them. I like the idea. I really do. There you go. That's me and my off my soapbox for this week's interview. Steve, seriously, mate, if you do get time to listen to this, I know you've gone into Panto world now. I know you've got loads of people around you and you've got to be that absolute star that I know you are, mate. Thank you so much for taking a bit of time out to have a chat with your old buddy who wears a trilby for next to no reason. yeah. And when I say that, the next to no reason is we keep looking at the numbers and it's now about 70% of you look at the podcast and the other 30% check out YouTube. It's only 30% of people even know I'm wearing a trilby.
It's true.
It's true.
It is so funny what our numbers are like.
Oh, mate, I don't get it. I still don't get it. I really don't get it. And on that, I'm just going to put a bit of merch in front of the screen just for the YouTubers.
I've been merching up all the way through.
I know, proud of you, mate. Sorry, for everyone on the podcast, that was really bad because we went quiet as we both had a drink out of Newton's Nuggets mug.
Just imagine merch. There it is.
See, I nearly did a big slurp of my tea then so the podcasters would have something, but then I started to find it funny and nearly giggled in my own tea. So I won't do that. Jesse, anything else we need to mention for this week?
Just good luck, really, to everybody involved with Panto. I know it is a hard slog.
Mate, it is. It is.
You know, it's basically 2 days, twice a day for every day. For a couple of months.
Mate, and do you know, and when you get into that routine, right, there's this weird moment when you get into that routine and you'll be acting or on the stage or you'll be doing something and then you'll go, which part of the show am I at? And your brain just goes, not telling you. Right? And then, right, when you're doing that, you'll then come back and somebody will give you a line or something and you're like, ah, I'm there. Okay, right, got this. And you carry on. And then somebody, normally one of the management that's in an office somewhere, will go, sales are going really well. So what we're going to do this weekend is we're going to drop in 2 extra shows. I'm sorry, when? So you're going to have to get up early on a Saturday and a Sunday to do 2 extra shows those 2 days. What? And we're all really happy and proud about this because it's going so well. So we've already advertised it. Oh, God. Oh, okay.
So, yeah, people are slogging really hard on these Pantos. If you've got kids, the thing I didn't really realise, which I heard about listening to a lot of podcasts and radio over the last week, what with me being off, and I found out that actually kids who go to Panto are much, much more likely to go and see theatre as they grow older.
Yeah, they are.
And so, although it seems like a lot of silliness and granted it's a bit of fun, actually it's a whole world into a world of culture as kids grow up into becoming adults. And so I would definitely, if you know, I think that whilst it seems a lot of fun and silliness, it will probably help to enrich a lot of people's lives if we can get more people to go to Panto. So, yeah.
Mate,
I've got kids, take them.
I still remember taking Emily to her first Panto that I'd helped work on as well. And it was so cute and she was so happy and it's so worth it. It really is. And look out for deals as well. If you're a family, I know it can be expensive. Look out for family tickets and family deals. Okay? So, anything else, Jesse?
No.
Awesome. Well, in that case, we can have like Christmas bells around us and stuff because at the start of the city, you're not interested, are you?
No.
No? Ladies and gents, happy Christmas!
Meh.
And we will see you next week on Newton's Nuggets. Bye-bye!
Bye.